Green fork. All right, ladies and gentlemen, at 6:30, I'm going to call this meeting to order. First item on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance, led tonight by Councilmember Ferguson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, everybody, for coming out tonight. We got a little bit of a packed agenda and some interesting stuff here tonight. Mr. Mergel is here with a East Hunt High School activities update, and he gets right to the front of the line like always.
Right.
Go ahead, mister.
Like you pointed out, my name's on the building.
Your
Thank
name's on the
you.
building. You get some pull around here.
First thing up, all of our fall activities started. We have scrimmages this weekend. Football's Friday at 5 and 7. Volleyball Saturday morning at 10. Soccer goes at 11. We started golf yesterday with tournaments. We had our own JV on Boxers today. So we're on running and rolling. Our first home events are 8/28 and 8/30 that play football. Soccer's 8/29. And our kids have been working hard all summer cross country because they've been running all over town. I see them when I go out running. It's kind of cool to see those guys out. Our gyms have been full. Can't really tell our school's out of session because we always have people in our buildings working out. We are hosting divisional volleyball this year in November, so that's gonna be a good event for us. Another thing we do have is outside tournaments at our tennis courts on the first weekend of event or September. So if that Monday, if you guys can pick up the garbage, that'd be awesome. We appreciate that. I've been out delivering our fall sports calendars. Everybody in the city's got Hall's got them. I think I've got every business in town. So if anybody's looking for one, I got more. Okay. I appreciate everything the city does for us. You know, the crosswalks all look good. They're freshly painted for the school year. And homecoming week is 9/22 through 9/27. The homecoming parade will be 9/26 at 2 p.m. And I believe that the dance will be that night because everybody, we have some teams going out early the next morning for activities. So we'll have a Friday night dance. I think we're hoping to do a dance outside right there between the field and the school. So that should be a pretty cool event. And so when somebody calls and says there's a lot of noise at 11 o'clock at night, it's just our kids finish stuff.
Speaking of the boys dropping.
I know our cross country, they started with a 12:01 midnight run. You know, they did a glow stick run that first night last Friday, which is pretty cool. So you never know if people might say these people running around in the dark. And so,
On fire.
any questions? We're excited to get going though.
You could express to Coach Murray and
What's
staff.
that?
You could express to Coach Murray and staff that the mayor's expectation is that
I already have
playoffs are an
questions.
expectation, not a
Well,
program.
my expectations. We had a good year last year. We had our softball man to state. You know, we had good track and football in the playoffs. We had boys basketball at the state tournaments. So, I mean, we're coming. We're in year seven. You know, we started with all freshmen. I think that's pretty good that in year seven we're accomplishing a lot of good things. So that's it.
Thank
See
you,
you in like November.
thank you, sir. But
Guys, have a great night.
thanks.
Appreciate you. All right, next up is public comment. It's time to set aside for public comment on all non-agenda items. So if you have a something you'd like to comment about on the agenda, please hold those comments to that time. But if you have a non-agenda item, this is the time. Is there anybody online? There any public comment on non-agenda items? Seeing none, we'll move on. All right, Council, in front of you have the minutes from the August 5th, 2025. Meeting? Oh, no. You want to go ahead? Are we doing that first? I'm skipping you.
That's fine. I noticed you walked right
Trying to
by.
skip that one as much as I can. But here we go. Okay. Buckle in. Jeremy's going to give us a presentation
Okay.
of much import, but
Is important.
we're going to be here.
Okay. This is the first meeting that we'll have on the wastewater facility plan that we've been working on for several months. I'll apologize up front. This is lengthy. There is a lot of acronyms for Kelly's simple understanding.
That's true. He's not lying.
And there are topics that are probably complex, but so at any time, please stop me, ask questions, have me explain more, and we'll go from there. So I was here probably about 9 months ago. I think it was November of 24. You bet, anything. And if you remember, this was the meeting where I had the Dr. Seuss book that said all the places you'll go, and we talked about where we've been, where we were currently, and where we are headed. So just to recap that meeting, where have we been? We did a surface water discharge permit renewal. You do those every 5 years when they expire. That did get administratively extended, so that's good news. We were working on a groundwater permit application. I'll touch on that a little bit more. We obviously passed the rate increase for the headworks and CIPP projects, so that was great. And then we are continuing to work with Shane Persley out at the wastewater plant on process optimization. That's just to keep your tired, very long-running plans in order. So where are we now? Obviously, the headworks and CIPP projects. Sorry, I need to go back. That project's underway. The headworks and IPS portion is currently under construction, looking at completion sometime next spring. The slip lining project was completed in June, and hopefully we'll know next year the results of the reduced INI. The groundwater permit application was completed about the same time as the last meeting. It was November 19th, 24. It is still under DEQ review, and I'll talk about why that is here a little bit later. Most importantly, where are we headed? So the thing that I'll talk about most tonight and consume the most time will be the facility plan. I'll mention a little bit about development plan and overall treatment plant upgrade on the last slide here. So moving forward, why do we need a facility plan? We get asked that question a lot, and communities would rather just design and build. They don't want to do planning because they don't see the value in it. So a few things to think about. What's great about a facility plan is it identifies alternatives. It's not just the first thing that comes to our mind. We look at different alternatives. We analyze those for both capital and O&M or life cycle costs. It sets us up for design criteria for the future upgrade. And maybe most importantly, or at least worth noting, is up-to-date facility plans can be submitted to funding agencies for grant and loan dollars. A lot of them, it's a minimum requirement. So it's important to keep your planning documents up to date. Looking at the table of contents, seven chapters tonight, we're going to focus on the first five. As I mentioned earlier, I apologize because it is. Next page. Okay. I think there's some misconception and maybe a little bit of concern that an upgrade to the treatment plant is only necessary to support future growth. And if you have visited the treatment plant in the last probably 3 months and you've talked to Shane or you've had a beer with Shane at the bar, he will tell you that the plant is not on its last legs, but it is definitely tired. And so an upgrade is required no matter what, regardless of growth. The original plant was built in 2002. Typical design life for that is 20 years. So obviously we've passed that and we're getting into the extended warranty, the extended life of the plant. So an upgrade is necessary. If you're going to go through the efforts of designing, constructing, and operating a new plant, you might as well design it to handle increased loads that are within your planning horizon. And also, you want to make sure that you have improved effluent quality. That's going to be important here as we talk about that. What that upgrade would include is a new secondary process plus disinfection. It would be an upgrade to the solid stabilization and dewatering capabilities. Based on some long-range planning, we propose initiating design in the first quarter of 2026 and having at least the first half of the treatment plant upgrade operational by January of 2029. And that will allow future growth coming down the road to start flushing plants. Okay, here we go. All right, so let's get into chapter one. One of the first things you have to do when you start analyzing a facility is what is coming into the wastewater treatment plant. So we're going to talk about flows and loads. So here's a picture of the wastewater service area, obviously pretty familiar. That is the existing wastewater service area. It's mostly contiguous with the city boundaries other than Pele Park and Red Fox Meadows, which you guys agreed to take their wastewater, even though they're not part of the city.
Clark Street.
What's not shown is the huge amount of development shown on the map there in the gray, all of the MET, the previous METG property that has been bought by two developers to date. They have large plans to develop that property. Okay. So when we talk about wastewater flows, it's good to look historically at what's coming in order to make projections of the future. So you may see this as 2019 to 2023, and that may seem odd. Obviously, we've gone through 2024 and halfway through 2025. But what you have to recognize is when we started work on the Headworks project, we set some design criteria. And that design criteria has a 15 and a 30-year planning horizon, which I'll talk about a little bit more. And so we are not going to change that as flows go up or down slightly over the few years. We check it to make sure that our projections are correct, but everything is based off of that 5-year window of 2019. The reason I've got the dry weather flows boxed out on the right is dry weather flows is when you're not getting INI from groundwater or surface water in the system. So it's a more true projection of what the city is truly discharging in terms of toilet, showers, washer, dryers, that kind of thing. So if you look from 2021, which is about the start of development, all the way to 2023, in that 3-year window, flows went up about 30%, which equates to about 260 residential units. If I use 2024 data, that increases almost 42%, or 308 single-family residences. So that is a good sign of growth is definitely starting to occur. New houses are coming online, starting to produce wastewater.
Can we ask questions during?
Sure.
Do you have an explanation as to why it decreased from 19 to 20 with more wastewater users?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So 2019, if I could show you the graph, had a flow where normal base flow is here. 2019 had a flow that was up here. If you remember, really, really wet year, the plant saw sustained flows over 1 million gallons a day.
Even during the dry period.
That continued all the way through the dry. It just took forever for the groundwater to finally go down. So 2019 is not really a true indication of dry weather or growth or that kind of flow, but the other years are.
And then thank you for explaining that. Kevin, do you have the numbers for 24 and so far through 25 halfway?
Yeah, we have. I mean, yeah, not all the way.
Can you share those with us via email or if that's okay? I just want to see what it looks like.
Is there a similar layout as that? Best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
Okay. Kevin, that's not.
Yeah. So you're going to do it.
Okay. Perfect.
If it's not too much, Kevin.
Thanks. The spreadsheet's already done.
We
I
have,
see
we have it.
Okay. All right. I mentioned that we had two planning horizons. This goes back to when I first started working again at RPA. We came back in 2022. We had those colored maps and everybody kind of threw a dart at it and said, this is where we think growth is going to occur. Some of that has panned out, some of it is not. But that effort started in 2022. So we picked 15 years from that, which was 2037, and we picked 30 years from that, which is 2052. And again, just because we're working on a facility plan in 2025, we're not going to adjust those horizons. Those flows were blessed by the council, and that is what our target is moving forward. So as we move forward through this process, you will continue to see references to 2037 flows, 2037 users, that kind of stuff. A little confusing, but that's what we decided. I guess the two boxes are really what I want to point out. If you remember back to the slide before, on an annual average basis, the plant receives a shade under 300,000 gallons a day. Okay, there is an amount currently where we see that. We are projecting in 2037 that the plant will see 1.2 million gallons. So four times that amount. In 2052, we bump up to 1.65, nearly 5 to 6 times what we are. I think everybody can understand, and you know, we can attest that growth is not moving as fast as maybe we originally thought, which is great because that's giving you time to get an upgrade built, increase rates and do all that kind of stuff. But it does indicate that flows are going to go up and substantially based on over here. All right, so we've talked about what's coming into the plant. Now we got to talk about once we treat it and it's going out, what target do we have to meet? So we're going to talk about effluent limitations, so the back end of the plant, and how we dispose of both the liquid process and the solids process of the plant. So currently you have a surface water discharge, and if you go to DEQ, that's called an MPDES, one of those acronyms, permit, And the plant has had that for as long as you've been discharging the brick. That renewal was completed in August 2024. They basically went, there's a current lawsuit at the EQ, and they have many, but one of them has to do with new needs. And so what it has done is it has stalled all permits being reissued, being worked on. So essentially what the department does is they administratively extend everyone's permit. So the permit that you were issued in 2019 that just expired, you will continue to operate underneath that permit, both limitations and testing and all of that, until they get things figured out with some of the NGOs that are suing the department and they start issuing new permits. So good news is same limits, same. You're continuing to discharge brick prepared creek, all is good. Just need to clean up a few things at the plant, and that would be great. As I mentioned before, we talked about a groundwater discharge permit. That permit is needed for future effluent compliance. It is not needed for today. It's not needed maybe for 15 years from now, but at some point in time, if flows continue to increase, groundwater discharge is going to be necessary. So therefore, that's why we're really focused on getting that permit in hand so that we can utilize that as a tool moving forward.
And those, if they're not used, don't expire?
They do expire, so it's on the same permit cycle. It's a five-year permit cycle. So if you get issued a permit in 2026, 2031, it will expire. You just have to read it.
But we don't have to use it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. So last week, Kevin, yes, we met the EQ. They don't have a timeline right now for issuing that permit. They want the city to do some additional sampling. We're going to put together a sampling and analysis plan, get that to the city. We'll go through that. We'll resubmit that information to DEQ, and then hopefully that keeps the wheels turned and gets a resolution here on the discharge. Hopefully we get that discharge permit. We will build infiltration percolation cells to where you can discharge it in the ground. And we're targeting about 1 million gallons a day for that facility. So pretty substantial. Maybe. All right, biosolids. That is just a fancy term for sludge, dewatered, stabilized sludge. It is a byproduct of the activated sludge process. It's stuff you have to get rid of. EPA uses two categories. They call them Class A and they call them Class B. So Class A treatment, I use the quote, exceptional quality. Basically, when you get done treating to Class A standards, you can give that product away to the public, or you can use it on public works projects. So think composting like Glacier Gold, Eco Compost out of Missoula, those types of products be Class A. And basically it looks like a dirt product that you can use in your garden, you can use on parks, use it on landscaping and stuff. Class B solids is slightly lower than that. They call it a process to significantly reduce pathogens. If you treat to Class B standards, and there's lots of methods that you can do to get there, you can apply that on farmland. So it's a beneficial reuse. Either in the spring or in the fall, you haul it out, you till it into the ground, they plant a crop, nutrients that are in those biosolids get used to grow better crops. So it's a great way to dispose of biosolids. The last one is what we call unclassified, because it's either A or B. Essentially, if you treat it like garbage, it has to pass a paint filter test. It has to pass a T-clip for metals and some other things. And basically, you just haul it to a certified municipal solid waste bin. Just goes into a cell there and they cover it up. And that is what you guys do today. That you treat to unclassified biosolids classification. There are a few regulatory hurdles on the horizon. They're not worth panicking about, but obviously they're worth mentioning. The first is nutrients. I mentioned it. Across the state, across the map, there is a trend towards decreasing waste load allocations. And the reason is because it causes algae blooms, it causes lower DO in streams and creeks and lakes, and it's just not doing its nuisance problem. Primarily nitrogen and phosphorus, and hence the lawsuits that are going around with Q. There could possibly be changes to metals limits, either good or bad. So originally, when the permit prior to 2019 was issued, you had permit limits for copper, lead, zinc. You did so good on lead and zinc that they said, we don't even need to check those anymore. You just keep testing for copper. Is copper going to go away? Probably not. Prairie Creek is still full of copper that is not associated with facilities telling them he has other problems. So I don't expect that to leave, but there could be other ones that either creep up or go away. Per and polyfluoral alkyl substances. PFAS. PFAS is in the news. It's in the drinking water systems, which is where EPA and DEQ's focus is right now. It's a forever chemical. It comes from fire retardant. It comes from Teflon pans. It comes from pretty much everything we have. And in large concentrations, it's cancer causing. But concentrations we're talking about in drinking water and even in wastewater are so minute that I think there's fairly little health concern, but EPA always takes seems maybe a little conservative, and then sometimes they start to back that down. The good news with PFAS is on the wastewater side, you are several urban cycles, probably a decade or more away before you even have to start thinking about this. But it is good because you will hear about this. Okay, effluent design criteria. So what are we going to design the new plant to produce in order to meet compliance with DEQ? I'll just focus on a couple. BOD and TSS, I'd call those traditional constituents. Your plant does a great job of doing removal on those now. Nothing will change. We're targeting about 95%, which is great. Where we'll focus more of the design on the new plant is better nutrient removal. So we need to ratchet nitrogen down close to 90% and phosphorus down a little higher than 90% in order to discharge it to the creek and also to the groundwater ponds. Okay. Copper will remain the same. All right, chapter 3 is typically where we talk about preliminary treatment. Good news is the city's already tackling that, which is fantastic. So these next few slides are going to focus on the project. If you haven't been out there and you want to go out there, set up a tour, you can go visit with Shane, go out there with Kevin. I would recommend maybe in a couple of weeks would be a great time to go out because they'll have most of the large structural concrete poured. It'll be pretty cool to look at. So this is a picture on the left and a drawing on the right of what your new insulin pump station will look like. All the flow that comes from East Helena, that comes from Red Fox, from Pele, from Vigilante, from Island Meadows, will go through this insulin pump station. It's very similar to your current insulin pump station. It's just bigger, and there's one more of it. Great facility. Contractors doing a good job. It's very large. Very large. Okay? Screening system.
He's not kidding. The concrete bills have also been very large. It's scary to sign those checks.
It is a little scary. Okay. So one of the things that plagues the current plant is material that doesn't break down biologically. It's stuff that people flush down the toilet that they shouldn't flush down the toilet. And it causes problems with downstream equipment and the downstream process. So I'm talking about plastics. I'm talking about flushable wipes. I'm talking about debris that people put down their toilets that just shouldn't go down your toilet. And ultimately, what you'd like to do is remove all of that before it gets into your downstream process and causes problems. So you guys do have a screen. It was meant for smaller flows than what you sometimes see. And it is truly just worn out. I think she repairs it semi-annually. I mean, it takes a lot of love to keep it going. And the problem is it's not very good at removing what it's supposed to do. So you will find lots of plastics, flushable wipes, floating in the basins downstream, which is just an absolute nightmare for plant staff. So we've designed a new dual screen system that will reduce down to smaller. So right now it'll reduce down to 1/4 inch, which is really good. It will go into a conveyor and then ultimately a washer compactor, which will remove some of the organics. It won't be as smelly, and it'll just be a better process overall. So protecting downstream, it's a good investment. Next one, Amy. Likewise, grit removal is important. And grit, I think there's a couple ways to think of it. Grit is small pebbles and rocks and stuff that gets into the collection system from manholes, from openings and pipe and that. But it's also rice, corn, and weeds, stuff that just doesn't break down biologically. So if you go to the plant, you will see rocks and debris, and you will see rice, corn, and weeds in dirt. Okay? It's important because that's stuff that just is not good for the downstream process. Okay, so grit removal consists of 3 pieces of equipment. One is a vortex grit chamber. So water comes in, it goes in a counterclockwise direction. The heavier stuff goes to the middle. You pump it up to a grit washer, which again, cleans it, makes it less odorous, returns the organics to the process, and it goes on to the next stage. Very important. Picture on the left is from Deer Lodge, very similar type system, and the one on the right is a design of what yours will look like. Humans. Amy? Okay. Before I move on to chapters 4 and 5, which is a lot of information, any questions so far? How are things going? Are we liking wastewater? Kelly knows I know that. Okay. Chapter 4 is the analysis of the secondary treatment and UV disinfection part of the report. And Chapter 5, we'll talk about solid stabilization in deep waters. Chapter 4, we looked at 3 alternatives to replace your current secondary treatment facility. One of them is an oxidation ditch. And these are tried and true. They've been around for hundreds of years. And there are several operating around the state. We went and toured Belgrade, but there are also ones in Lewistown and Miles City. Very good process. It's a version of activated sludge, and activated sludge essentially just means small microorganisms. You give them air and they go to work and they chew up those biodegradable, the bio stuff, and then you settle them out and you get rid of them. So activated sludge is a process. An oxidation ditch is a large oval racetrack shaped basin. So instead of nice rectangular basins, these are oval in shape and the flow literally goes around like this. They have long solids retention times. And what's great about that is it helps minimize process upsets, and it's good for biological nutrition. Oxidation ditches are pretty bulletproof. They're ideal for limited staffing. You guys are not fortunate. There are plants in the state that have 13 operators. You have one.
Kinda.
You have a couple of backups. He's pretty good.
Kinda.
He's pretty good.
I think some of the stuff that they're getting in the river is ending up his hair. But
what's great about a ditch is it's low on down. And it does produce exceptional effluent quality. They use either rush rotors that sit on top of the surface and keep things moving and aerated, or they have just big slow speed mixers that sit on one end and keep stuff in suspension. In partnership with a ditch, you have to have clarifiers because that mixed liquor that has that biomass, you can't just send that to the creek. You have to settle it and separate the clean water. So a secondary clarifier is just a big circular basin, solid settle at the bottom, and clean water goes over the top. You return those solids either to the process to keep doing work, or you waste them when they get old, and that's when we start talking about solid stabilization. Okay, Amy? I didn't have a great picture. Most of them had Kevin's mug and we went to Belgrade.
That will ruin a picture.
Solid waste. The left one is, ouch. Ouch. That was good, though. The left one is a picture of Belgrade, so you kind of start to see the two channels, the one on the left, which is full, and they're actually using the one on the right, which is just full of water. But a lot of concrete. They have a big footprint, but it is a very good process. On the picture is a clarifier for Deer Lodge. You can see just a big tank, very slow moving. It skims the scum off the top, and then on the bottom, it's pushing that sludge that settles towards the center. Okay, Amy? Next type of technology that we're looking at is called a sequencing batch reactor, an SBR. So you'll hear SBR quite a bit. Instead of a process where things move through in time, it's one basin and you change the processes in that basin over time. So instead of having multiple basins, you just have one and you do everything inside that one basin, including clarification. So the 4 general phases that occur in program time intervals is fill. So you add wastewater, you react it, so you add air and you mix it, you settle it, and then you draw off the treated effluent, and that goes through a decanter that kind of sits up on the surface. So there's no need for secondary clarifiers, which allows SBRs to have a smaller footprint and some cost savings because you don't have to pour all that big concrete. The drawback is they are a little more complex. There's more moving parts. There's more automation involved, these time sequences and readings that it has. But they do still produce high effluent quality. They utilize blowers, submerged diffusers, and some type of surface mixer suspension. So SBRs, they're currently operating in Four Corners, which is where these photos came from. Whitefish also operates, and Livingston is another place that has a new SBR system. On the left, you can just see the single rectangular basin on the floor of the diffusers. The decanter is the piece of metal kind of you see in the forefront, and then the mixer is in the back. And then they just utilize this kind of compact, aggressive cavity blowers here on the right to provide aeration for the process. Maybe. All right, third alternative that we looked at, you could say is probably the most advanced, and it's the best, but it also comes with a higher price tag. So a membrane, I was trying to think of a simple way to explain this, but a membrane is basically kind of like a sheet of plastic that has these really, really microfine pores that have been punched in it. And then it can either be on a flat sheet. So, I mean, literally it would look like this, and they stack, obviously bigger, but they stack a ton of them in a basin. And then I've got a photo later. They make almost like spaghetti strand type membranes. And that is what you do. You use a pump and you pull the dirty liquid up against it. The clean liquid goes through the pores, and you get a really, really high quality of essentially just water. So it does require some reactor basins in various stages. The membranes are typically submerged, and they're either hollow fiber or flat sheet. One of the benefits of a membrane is because you're not relying on gravity to settle those solids, you're actually pulling it through a physical barrier. You can run 2 to 3 times the mixed liquor that you can in a normal process. So if your mixed liquor is 3 times higher, your basin can be 3 times smaller. So one of the selling points of a membrane is, look, they cost less, right? The concrete costs a lot less. Well, those guys are smart. They price their equipment much more in order to make it competitive. So even though it does have a smaller footprint, it does come with some higher costs. It's pretty complex to operate. If you talk to the people, so membrane facilities that I'm aware of, Butte is one, Big Fork is another, and then Big Sky just opened up their brand. So if you talk to those operators, they will tell you that, yes, it does produce first-class wastewater, but they are complex and they aren't fit to operate. The other thing is that the costs are really, really high. You have to keep those membranes clean, so you're constantly scouring them with air. You have to chemically clean them every now and then. Those two things tend to drive up O&M costs. And then there's just a pile of equipment, blowers, mixers, pumps, actuated valves. Amy, next picture, you can see it here. These are some photos from the Butte wastewater plant that we toured. On the left are those membranes. So literally those modules probably stand about this high. So there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of those membranes that get put in the wastewater to separate the solids from the liquids. But you can see really large diameter pipe, lots of pumps, automated valves. It is truly a pretty complex facility to operate. I'll tell you now that it's probably not likely to be split based on some of those things. Okay. How's that for secondary treatment?
Good question. I know you'll get into the details later about why you select them, what fits already the best, but is there any variance in these three types in their shelf life? I.e., we have a 20-year shelf life on our current plant. Is there a variant in these three and plant life?
Yeah, that's a great question. We will get into recommendations for alternatives in September 16th. But generally, something that has less operating equipment, rotating equipment, and something that has maybe more concrete, the one that has more concrete and less equipment is probably likely to last longer. Something that has a lot of rotating equipment, you're constantly replacing them and it just doesn't last as long. So if I were to kind of peg those three alternatives, longest lasting oxidation ditch, and you can go to Miles City or you can go to they're operating ditches from the 80s. I mean, stuff that is still pretty tried and true. Minor tweaks, minor upgrades, but long life. SBR is probably in the middle and membrane is probably going to last the least longest. Now the basins will last and all of that, but you know, pumps, valves, membranes. Membranes only have a 10-year life expectancy. So you're having to replace those, and that's a pretty big cost. It's like $4 million to replace a membrane.
Thank you.
Wow. Good question.
With the three of them, how, you know, they're obviously they changed what, you know, how much nitrogen, how much phosphorus, everything else. How upgradable is, you know, your trench system personally?
Yeah, that's a good point. So I'd like to say that in the 25 years I've been doing this, the one technology that is probably advanced the most is probably membranes. Oxidation ditches, the technology for those has not changed much and it's still working today. There are things you can do to tweak those in the future, like you could go to submerged diffusers or you could break it up into cells and modify it, I guess, upgrade it in the future. But I think, Don, what most facilities are doing is once they get into a technology, they just build more of that technology and they replace the equipment. So if we said, hey, let's do oxidation ditches, you might build a few of them. And then as things expand, as nutrient limits get lower, you would continue to add ditches and you might add a tertiary type process to that instead of a wholesale change to something. Is that,
yeah,
okay. So that, I mean, once you kind of buy into the technology, you're kind of, you're not stuck. But
yeah, I mean,
that,
it doesn't become obsolete in 10 years from now and we can't meet any standards.
And again, like I said, oxidation ditches have been around for hundreds of years. The technology to get air and mixing has maybe changed maybe in the last 5 decades, but ditches are not going away anytime soon. Membranes, I mean, there's some tweaks to membranes right now that people are seeing and starting to do that I wouldn't say it'll be obsolete, but there will be changes. Technology advances.
I don't know how to ask the question efficiently, but is not knowing exactly what our development will be, which also then translates to the staffing we may or may not have at the plant. What would you say is the easiest for the few staff we have to know how to utilize? I worry about going to a really highly technological system with one or two or three, depending on what growth and we're able to staff out there, having the knowledge of where if we had maybe a less sophisticated.
Yeah, Wes just said Pursley's a Honda, not a Maserati.
He's accurate.
Now. He is very simple creature.
But I think that's for anybody. And no, for anybody on the crew that if we only have one person that knows that really in-depth technology and that person is there, can't be there, goes away. That's a concern.
Yeah,
with a less sophisticated system that more people have the ability to step in and run the plant and need it.
So I'm not going to entirely punt on this, Wes, but I am going to tell you that one of the things that we use in our analysis, which is the next meeting. So we're going to talk about costs, but we're going to talk about non-economic factors. So when we get into non-economic factors, you're talking about health and safety, talking about environmental impacts. You're talking about operational flexibility and maintenance. Those are all things that when we do the analysis, and we've already started and we've already done some of it, we look at those factors, we weight them, and we talk with staff, and we say, where do you think these things rank? So something that might be less costly and more complicated to run, that may not end up being what you select. You may pick something you pay a small premium for, but yet it's so much easier and it's going to last longer and it produces better effort. So you may not pick the least cost alternative, and that's what we're going to talk about at the next meeting.
So, he mentioned earlier staffing is a big factor in that for our days.
Yeah, I'll tell you that operations, based on feedback from Kevin and Shane, we ranked operational complexity and cost the same height, the same weight as capital cost. So I mean, that tells me that cost is important, but yet operations is equally as important. That was a decision we made, and that's what we did in analysis. So
thanks.
Yeah,
you answered my question.
Good. Okay. Solids. This is the dirty side of the things that people don't like to think about. You'd like to just take the sludge and put it somewhere and not think about it, but you have to dispose of it properly. So we'll start with Class A biosolids, and there are lots of ways, not lots, but there's a handful of ways to achieve Class A biosolids. The most common is composting, but City of East Helena doesn't want to get into composting business since it's meant for a larger operation. You need big footprint, you need all these things, you need a lot of staff, you just don't have enough. So we looked at maybe more compact types of Class A biosolids, and we looked at two or three, and ultimately we settled on one, which is called a thermal sludge dryer. So essentially what it is, it's an automated continuous process. You dewater the sludge to 15 to 30% solids, put it at the start of this dryer. It goes through a lot of time and temperature, so up to 600 degrees Fahrenheit. That requires a lot of natural gas, requires a lot of air. And what comes out the other end is a product that is essentially free of pathogens. It only has 10% water, so we're talking like a dry dirt type product, but essentially you can give it to the public. So a lot of places will either bag it and try to sell it, or literally they'll have a pile and just say, bring your bucket, come out, get 5 gallons, a wheelbarrow, whatever it is, take it home, put it on your car. So it is a product that doesn't cost you, really. It does cost you, but you're not hauling it to the dump and you're not paying a farmer on their field. You can literally give it away. Very complex, very high in capital and operating costs. Not likely to be the ultimate. But we have to take a look at it. I am not aware of any thermal sludge drying going on in the state of Montana, but we wanted to look at it to see if it made sense, and it probably won't. Okay? There's potential. The thing on the right is the thermal sludge dryer. So pretty big, takes a big building, but obviously it produces a product that's pretty cool. All right, next one, Andy. Aerobic digestion produces a class B solid, biosolid. There's different types of digestion. Bigger plants typically go with anaerobic digestion because, one, it doesn't require as much aeration, and it is cheaper to operate, but it produces methane, which is extremely flammable and dangerous, and it's not appropriate for a plant of your size. So we didn't even look at anaerobic. We looked at aerobic digestion, which is more appropriate for medium-sized plants, which is ultimately measured. So in aerobic digestion, you typically have basin sized for 40 to 60 days of solids retention time. And essentially, that is just the time needed to stabilize the sludge. There's a thing called time and temperature. If we had 80 degrees all the time, you could probably get these basins down to maybe 20 days of SRT. But the fact it gets down to 10 or 8 degrees C, the wastewater, you have to have at least 60 days in order to stabilize the pH requirements. Basically, what you do is you take air, and what we're really concerned with is the oxygen that's in the air. You inject it into these basins through diffusers and blowers. It breaks down the organic material, and it minimizes odors, which is great. You can either do that through aeration and diffusers, or you can do it using a combination of aeration and mechanical equipment, and I'll explain that here a little bit later. Oh, back 1 second. Amy, all right. One of the nice things, and I'll talk about decoupled systems in the photo next. One thing you can do in anaerobic digestion to help you with the amount of basin volume is you can turn off the air, turn off the mixing, you can settle the solids, you can take the clean water, we call that decanting. So you take the clear liquid, you send it back to the plant treatment, and that allows you to increase solids concentration and reduce the amount of volume that you need. Typically, aeration is provided by blowers and diffusers. Okay, next one. So traditional aerobic digestion consists of blowers and diffusers to do process and mixing. The problem is you need very large blowers. You need a lot of diffusers. Somebody way smarter than me came around and said, hey, what if we decouple those two things? What if we put in a smaller mixer to keep things mixed? And this is a picture of a process that we investigated and looking at. That's just a really big swirly stick. So it just spins really slowly and it mixes the basin. And then what it allows you to do is purchase and install a smaller blower that therefore uses less energy. And then you can use those two technologies together to do aerobic digestion. That's just a picture of kind of
how big is this tank? You know, that we put the swirly in.
So for aerobic digestion, good drink. I think we were talking 45 feet wide, 80 feet long, 17 feet. Okay, so I don't know if that's the size of this building, but it's darn close.
A lot bigger than that picture.
Yeah. That's got to be a big swirly stick.
You need two of them. That's the beauty. So, I mean, I think, I can't remember the gallons, but these are very large and very large. Concrete basins. Okay. The last thing we'll talk about is sludge storage. And this produces unclassified biosolids. I'll tell you that this is very similar to the process that you do right now, where you take solids, you put them in a basin. Hopefully they won't sit for 20 years, right, Kevin?
Right.
Right.
Deal with them on a more frequent basis than previous plant staff did. But essentially all you're trying to do is create a wide spot in the road where you can put the solids, you can aerate them, you can stabilize them, reduce the odor, and then it allows you to dewater them when the operator has the time. So say he's going to go on vacation to a fishing tournament for whatever it is, 10 days. He can dewater, get that level down low enough to where those 10 days, other plant staff or, you know, a second guy that comes in doesn't have to dewater. He can just let it fill up. So it's basically just an equalization or a basin that has volume for either the operators out, or if he has to do any maintenance or repair. Same thing, you can still set up a DTAN. And traditionally, when a basin gets this small, you are really looking at just blowers and submersion diffusers. Very similar to what DeerLodge has at their pump. Let's look at some photos. So on the left is DeerLodge. Concrete basin, pretty cool pattern. It actually smells earthy, and it doesn't stink right now. Your basin out there does not smell earthy. It is really bad. And they washed it with a fire hose today on the truck, and it was
real earthy.
Pungence, I think, is the word. It was so bad. The picture on the right is Butte. That's a dewater basin there that shows coarse bubble diffusers. Some people call them chicken feeders. I'm not sure why many people say that's just a weird one. That's what it looks like. Okay. I think we're getting close. So not only do you have to stabilize the sludge, but you have to dewater it in order to get rid of it, right? So we're going to look at three alternatives for dewatering. These are tried and true. They've been around for a long time. I won't really belabor them. Centrifuge, basically you take a scroll that's on the inside and you spin it really, really fast, and the water physically separates from the solid, goes to the outside and drains. And a cake, I don't know why they call it cake, because it doesn't taste as if it's cake, but it might look like cake.
You know.
The cake comes out dry on the other end, somewhere around 20% solids, and you do have to use some polymer on the order of 20 to 24 pounds. A rotary fan press is a piece of equipment that I have not worked with. I haven't designed. It looks really cool. Multiple units sit on a single shaft. It is a lot smaller motor. It spins at a lot slower speed. But again, it produces pretty good solids with limited amount of polymer. A screw press, it takes multiple units, but these are very popular in Montana. You can go to Deer Lodge, you can go to Four Corners, you can go to Missoula, Kalispell, Bozeman, Livingston, the list goes on. Screw press has taken really the world by fire, and I think it's because it has low horsepower input. You can literally start it, you can walk away, you can go do whatever else you're doing, and it will just continue to produce dry cake. It's tried and true. Okay, some photos. Upper left, that's a kind of a cutaway of a centrifuge. You can see that scroll in the middle. Solids come out the end. The liquid goes out the outside. The bottom left is a rotary fan press. So again, it just requires one motor and has a single shaft. Pretty cool technology. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. And on the right is a photo of the screw press that was in Four Corners. Great product. Something that we're seriously taking on fire. Yeah. Okay. Any questions on secondary treatment? I also didn't mention UV disinfection. We didn't look at chlorine and dechlorination. We didn't look at ozone. We've been using UV disinfection at the plant. It works great. It's very simple. We're just looking at maybe some upgrades. A little bigger size. There's an incline version, not just a horizontal now. So we're also doing that analysis. Not worth talking about much.
Well, sorry, I have a question.
Yes,
so
Jen.
You went through all these pictures. And then this last one, so in addition, we would pick one of those and then we would pick a dewatering alternative also? Or
that is correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yep. And that is the three that I gave you is probably one of there might be 12 different companies out there dewatering. One is drying beds, which you currently use now. You literally put it out there, you allow gravity and heat to dewater it. You scrape it up with a loader and we're talking something mechanical just because you're going to have so much more solids that you have to paint.
Okay,
more
now I understand. Thank you.
That sound good?
Yeah.
Yep. Good question. Any other good questions? All right, there'll be a quiz after that. All right, let's talk next steps. So I guess the first thing that I didn't put down is I'll be back in September for another riveting meeting. It will likely be shorter. But unfortunately, we're going to have to start talking about costs, talk about recommended alternatives. And with costs, is likely discussion about our meetings. That's just the reality of where you're at right now. A lot of communities in your guys' situations, but we'll come and we'll talk about that. We'll submit a draft to the city in October, and you'll all get your own copy of this facility plan, and you can read it at night, fall asleep, whatever it is you like to do. But we're looking at council adoption the fourth quarter of 2025. And that may seem quick to be able to digest this and make an informed decision, especially when we start talking about rates. But in order to maintain that schedule where we meet to have a plant upgrade in place by January of 2029. That's kind of the schedule that we're on. So unfortunately, I'm going to be putting some pressure on to you to make a quicker decision, just because the pressure is being put on us to move forward with the project. So sorry about that. We've talked about preparing a development plan. So essentially what a development plan is it's kind of a get out of jail free card, to where it allows you to make commitments to upgrade your facility, make commitments to have the funding in place, and make a commitment to move forward with an upgrade. And what it allows you to do is tell developers, yes, we're planning all of this stuff. Therefore, we can sign a will serve letter that says you can move forward with the planning process with your plans and specs and all the DEQ, and you can construct infrastructure. Because if you don't have a development plan in place right now, the way the law is written is, if you don't have capacity currently, you cannot write those will serve letters. So the development plan is a little bit of a get out of jail free for communities that are experiencing rapid growth, because I think the legislature and EQ recognizes that it's just so unfeasible to build all of this infrastructure to support growth that may or may not come. So this development plan is kind of a key way, or at least a way to get to that and work. So we'll likely start that here in November, submit to EQ, and hopefully get approval in the first quarter of 2026. Once we've adopted the facility plan, the city has basically chosen a secondary treatment alternative to move forward with, we will actually go into what we call pre-selection. And you may think, why do we have to pre-select? That just sounds like more money or work to me. And it is, it's both of those. But when you're talking about the sophistication and the variability in secondary treatment processes, even between an MBR and SBR and an oxidation ditch, if you pick an oxidation ditch, there are six or seven ways to build and design an oxidation ditch. Some of them are circular with multiple rings. Some of them are long and elongated. And they all use different types of technology to aerate. So instead of designing all of these different technologies or designing something that's flexible, what we've learned in the industry is it's best to pre-select, and that's based on cost. It's based on non-economic factors like, how good are they to work with? How reliable are they on producing their equipment? Are they going to give us the right drawings and stuff? What is the stability of their company? We'll analyze all of that. We'll select one company that we will then work with during design to help us with their process to save time and to save money. So that's why you pre-select. We'd like to get started with that in the end of this year, maybe. Depends on how the facility plan goes, the process goes. But we'd like to try to wrap that up in the first quarter of 2026 so that we can then kickstart designing and going at a fast pace. And lastly, we'd like to complete the IPS and Edwards project, which is ongoing. That's going to be a huge, huge accomplishment. Shape will be on tap here. It will protect your downstream investments of your existing plant a little bit longer. That is looking to finish up in December of 2025 with the structure. So the building will be enclosed. All the basins stuff will be backfilled. But there's kind of a delay in equipment right now in process equipment across the industry. That isn't going to show up until February, so we're looking at a startup in about March of 2026. Okay, last one. Questions? Appreciate your patience.
This has been a long process for all of us. Not a question, but appreciate your work. I know that you've put a lot of time into this. I think you were very clear and dumbed it down to even high enough some things. Pete's going to fail that test, to be honest with you, but I'm going to get it.
I think that we heard January 2029 is our target and our hope at the earliest that we may be able to flush toilets, additional capacity at the plant. You could remind me, when is the next time you'll be back and the next step for this council to consider and to take action on?
Yep. September 16th, I'll be back with what I'll call the alternative analysis. We'll talk costs. We'll talk non-economic factors. We will present our recommended alternative to the council, and I would assume sometime after that, the council will have to digest and rate. So I hate using that word because it's an ugly one, but it will have recommendations for a rate structure. Now, that won't be final, but it'll have kind of a ballpark of where what rates may need to be. Once you guys digest that, then what we would ask for is probably the following month, we would ask you to officially adopt facility plan, which then gives us the direction to move forward with some of those other items and tasks to stay on schedule.
So we're looking September 16th and then probably October, second meeting in October.
Probably.
So one, two. And that is based upon one, we just generally need another plant for the city. Ours is reaching the extent of its life cycle. And two, we have a lot of developers chomping at the bit, trying to continue to grow and add housing to this community. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Seeing no questions, appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Yep.
That was a real page turn.
Do we get to see pictures next time? I want more solids pictures.
We have the library people here. We have the library people here. I'm sure they're going to ask you to write a book about that.
2x4s.
All right. We did the public comments. There was none. We'll move to approval of minutes. In front of you is the August 5th, 2025 meeting. Graciously handled by everybody but me. I will open it up to public comment on those minutes. Seeing none, council.
Move to approve.
I have motion to approve. Yes. And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. You don't have a court reach there, do we? We don't have one this time. So I'll skip that one. That'll move us to departmental reports. First, as always, is Amy.
We're basically making sure that we had all our paperwork together and for our funding, and we did. And then they went out and toured the plant. Pool closed for the season on the 15th. And I think that triggered a lot of people to plan out fall as school has started. And we got so many phone calls about facility rentals today. Which is amazing. It was all the way out until October. So many phone calls today. And that's all I thought was.
Thanks, Amy. Chief Sanders has a report on your desk. It's fairly run of the mill. It's about to call from service stuff. Nothing new there. If you guys have comments, you can ask me or him or anyone else there. That brings us to Public Works. Kevin.
Oh, I'm fast. We've been here long. There's a couple things you guys have on my report. We did have a transformer fail last Monday night out of the wastewater plant. Thankfully, Northwestern Energy came out. 9 hours to change it, which said it was going to be a long night. I was not thinking 9 hours of being out there, but luckily we didn't lose any equipment over it. Everything survived. You know, when you lose a phase from those transformers, you know, it kind of sits there and those brownouts and surges and those weird things, but nothing broke. Jeremy mentioned in his report, we did have that meeting with DEQ for that groundwater permit. So we're going to have to come up with a sampling plan. It's likely at least a year of sampling. So this is not going to be a fast process. So when we talked that groundwater permit, we're going to meet with MEDD about some stuff on it too, but get that sample plan put together, and it'll be probably at least a year's worth of just getting stuff to the lab. So that's where we're at there. Lastly, luckily, Valley Drive is open. I apologize. I don't know. We had some miscommunication about why it didn't open Friday night, but Valley Drive's back open. Intersection of Rochelle is still just dirt, and also where we replaced with water valves is dirt. Helena Sand originally was supposed to be here this week to pave that stuff. They have some issues with the paving of Townsend's Airport and Missoula's Airport that is a way bigger contract than our couple pavement patches. So they won't be back until September to do our patchwork. They're going to work around the school schedule. So in the short term, we're just going to keep up with filling the pothole with the road mix. Just work with it as we can. So other than that, do you guys have questions?
Could you quickly address the Clinton Street? I know in your previous report, you had mentioned that.
I think, yeah, so
tell them what you've done.
Don and Suzanne received that email thinking that that resident was open to potentially maybe talking about that. We have door hangered. I've sent letters. At this point, there is no interest. So Clinton Street is still in the boat.
It is getting awful. The individual in question drives a Prius.
100%.
It can't be much longer for her.
Good thing is, and our plan is, you know, we just have that money set aside in gas tax, and I just kind of, I guess, if I break an avenue or mark, that if we can get all those residents to agree, I still want to, we'll go ahead with that office.
Are we going to charge them for it or something? I don't understand what the holdup is.
So,
they own the street.
Is those residents, but what we presented to them as a city was we said we would pay to do the survey.
In return, we're not willing to purchase that right of way, though. They're going to have to sign over that right of way, which is their property. And it would be dedicated public right of way. And unfortunately, the one resident is not willing to sign that property over. She wants to keep it. Her property.
Yeah.
Is that property in the center? It's a five house block, right?
Yeah, it's
2 houses in.
It's like on the last third of it. So it's the second house in from Harris.
There's five homes in that block, right? And it's the
second
one,
house.
Two?
Depending.
Or one, two, three. There's five.
Depending on which side you start from.
So from the west, it's the second house to the east.
It's not the middle house.
It's not the middle
house. Almost middle.
What's next to the middle house?
There's the potential to take those other four, pave those just behind that resident's home. Just leave it there. That is an option. I throw it out there to make it very obvious that where the public right-of-way ends and the neighbors were willing to cede some property so the city could come in and pave it, this is an option that we could do, which makes it blatantly obvious. Like this, they have a backyard that goes out in the middle of the street, and it's a – don't drive through. So you're driving over someone's property. I think there is an easement for
– So there's a utility access easement on it. So those residents, they can't fence it off. They can't put a shed on it. Has an access easement on it, which is never dedicated to the city's public right of way.
This would look pretty janky, however, it would be an option.
Complaining about having to drive over to one dirt spot, people are
every. I'm just throwing it out there. It is
something we can consider. This point with the sand schedule, we have all winter. They're not going to be able to do anything with this fall, something we can certainly.
And all of the other residents understand that we are not plowing it, and that is on that block.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I mean, I think that somebody is or something, but you know,
I'm talking to multiple. I work with one of the residents.
I am related to one of the residents.
Checks in with me every week about this, and I'm like, go talk to your neighbor. Who will not talk to him? That brings up Volunteer Fire Department, Chief Campbell.
No. Well, yeah. So I don't really have a whole lot. I'm about to be back in the first month of the fight. I'm very important. We do have one new member and potentially three more. Again, the next 2 days. We are getting two of them tonight. Now they're down doing that. So, we have less more membership. Some more stuff. I know at least three of them are medically certified. So it's going to help me out a lot. It's always a great thing when I get more medics. Three of us are getting them burned. We do have one back from military deployment, and he is a member of medics. So we welcome him back at the business meeting last week. So that's it. Speak to you.
Thank you, Chief.
Thanks.
All right, that brings us to unfinished business. What's going on, Don? You run one meeting? We get something, don't we get everything done? we have the East Hill Critical Souls, Stacia Wilson.
I think she's a member.
Yeah. So, yeah. So,
can we move this to after the other presentations?
Yes, we can. Well, we have handled on those morning rhythms. No one's here for it. No one's here for it, correct? I think that I wasn't here. So, my understanding of this is that they wanted to rent a space in the park and Main Street Park at the same time, and we had to make sure that
they set up 5G4.
They said
council wanted to get
neighboring them. Let's just handle
it. Sure, we can. There.
Is there any representative from J4 that would like to comment on this item right now?
Here. So, of course, we're trying to do a block party like we always do. It's going to be September 6th. It's always the first Saturday after Labor Day. This other one that I believe you're talking about, she has reached out to us as well, too, and she wants to do it in the park. We told her that's fine. You guys can have it the same day as us, but we're like, you can't combine Lane Avenue with Main Street Park. There's almost a mile of difference.
Yeah.
So I'm fine if she wants to take over Main Street Park, but we're still planning on doing our block party if we have permission from the council to.
Christmas stroll.
Christmas stroll. That's fine as long as we have room for our tent.
Yeah, she said she's done it.
Yeah, we've had other vendors that have been next to us before for that, and it's never been a problem. It's not like we're selling anything to be competitive with. It's just kids' fun tent. So
my thoughts are this is kind of Valley Bank has always kind of ran this, and I would direct any request to Valley Bank for this. They will request usage of the park, and We'll probably grant them to it as always, and then we'll say, "Do you know, I'd like to do something? Please contact the folks at my bank who are running this thing." That makes the most sense to me.
And then I was also going to ask Council too about we also do the movie and park involving. Is there any way that we can kind of make these like an auto recurring
instead of having? Let's handle that in new business one.
Okay.
See, like, see,
I'm just joking.
Yeah. No. Let's finish this one. I think Council. I think you guys probably understand that. Don't you think that this would be a good, great place to direct them to the individuals at Valley Bank who operate the Christmas stroll?
Yeah, I think
we didn't have any answers. We didn't have anybody here, and so we didn't have an answer sure. to. Were they requesting to organize the Christmas
stroll? No, they wanted to. What was yeah. the? I think they just wanted to be a vendor, and they went to the wrong spot. It sounds like to me. Kev, you checked into this that we're at. Okay. I say that I would deny the use of the park and say to talk to the people that are, then maybe later on here we'll talk about granting access to Valley Bank and then they can talk to them. Makes a lot of sense. Any public comment on the request? Seeing none, Council.
I'll make a motion to table or deny.
I have a motion deny. To deny
and refer.
I'll second it.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Hey, we got a new business for J4 Automotive. This is super fun. J4 is requesting the use of Main Street Park for Halloween and Christmas trolls. It says Kit. You've gotten much younger, Kit, and all this hair. What's going on? Yeah, man.
Some of you guys
that Rogaine is great.
Don't know me. My name is Chris Pratt. I'm the guy who meaningfully pushed Kit Johnson out of J4 Automotive and purchased it up underneath him. So.
And Mary's daughter.
I took his daughter and his and livelihood.
I did that in reverse. Yeah, it was my grand scheme of 10 years. But anyway, yeah, if we could use the park again, like you were talking about, motion to have Valley Bank be in charge for the Christmas stroll, that's fine. But as long as we can have it for Halloween, and then, of course, close off Main Avenue for September 6th for the block party from 10 to 3.
So you want to close off Lane?
Yes.
Is my understanding of the rest?
And I believe we did that last year, and that worked out really slick. There was a lot of families that come by. They walk down through the different businesses that are on Lane Avenue between us, Heritage, and Trace.
Sure.
And it's that rose gets kind of nice.
Sure.
I sit there in my office all day and watch at least six people every day. Oh.
Yeah. So is there any public comment on that request? Council.
Move to approve and appreciate all you guys do.
So, Wes, he did mention that he would like to have Halloween in particular be reoccurring. Is that correct?
Yes.
Was that part of your motion?
Well, so we have not done that in the past. Is that correct? We've asked people right. to come back.
He
says
to come back every year. Now.
But not just Chris, but for others as well, haven't we? For
we've never granted year-to-year grant that part. We have picked dates that we shut the street down. What's always been Main Street, rodeo, Halloween, and the stroll. Those three, we've decided to handle that and not have those be requested. So park usage, no, but we have shut the street down as a function of we just do these 3 dates.
But those folks still come back every year and ask for.
They don't have, they don't do that anymore. Nope. Not for the street closure, but for this. Public comment, Roger?
Yeah, so just something I caught at one of the other meetings is we granted continuous usage for somebody for the fire hall. There was a group that came in on weekends. Yeah, granted them a continuous usage. So you've set up rest of them.
Once a year, though.
2 years?
No.
Like 2 years every Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah. They are also paid for the hall.
I think it was right 2 years. I thought it was.
No, it's 2 years.
They wanted more.
Yeah. They wanted more. You might have to
agree. I would.
You can just stay with your straight motion if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And I think the fear is if we're all gone, you don't know that the new folks may not know that there's a blanket approval.
Sure.
So somebody else comes in and does it. I don't know. I think that's just part of the concern. I guess it would have.
He's straight on usage of the.
What?
That would have concerns with the perpetual. I mean, there's a 2 year on the
church
thing. There's a contract in place, there's a fee in place. This is.
Yeah,
I mean, I know it seems repetitive, but
that's fine. It's just a thought.
We appreciate you doing it every year, and hope you continue to. I think I would prefer to keep it because, yeah, that one was a different fee associated with an agreement that was made for every date. in the fire hall. So just to make sure that we know that people are doing it, who's doing it, and that we can kind of, like, to the request that was here before, make sure that we're funneling people to one and not everybody's coming to us for a different blanket. So
I have a motion to approve J4 Automotive use of Main Street Park for Halloween if that was still correct.
Of 2025. Yes.
I'll second.
And I have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right.
This motion does not cover the request for lane.
Right.
No. Yeah. Would you like to close the street for lane? That's actually also that.
But that was for MVP, right? That was
that,
for
that's MVP. That's not,
number six.
Yeah, we can't say we can. What we can do is we can. But, how do we do this? We can support your request to MDT, but Kevin will guide you through that.
Okay.
That how we would.
And that was for September 6th, not for Halloween or Christmas.
It's right. For the lock party.
Yeah, Halloween, right. Christmas. The Main Street's already closed. This was for late Avenue.
Yeah. But that wasn't part of that. That's why
it wasn't on his sheet, and he just mentioned it. And
yeah, and he just worked with Kevin to do that.
You could have a motion in support of that request.
Without it being on the agenda.
He made the request to you, I guess. I don't know.
Huh?
It's an every year thing. I would call Kevin and he would help you work you through the process of talking to DOT real, then you can make that request, right?
Yeah, so I guess we don't have control.
We don't. We can't.
Road, so why should we vote on it?
Yeah, we can't. We can just support it. So we've done it for.
Kevin knows a guy, though.
That was another website where you just type it in there. All right.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. And now we have the fine folks at Valley Bank who would like to do a Christmas stroll. Sounds like a great idea.
Yep. I just got approved.
Yeah.
We're planning on doing the Christmas stroll on Thursday, December 4th from 5:30 to 8:30. Hoping we can close the street. Sounds like that's done. Use City Hall. Use the Fireman's Hall. And then Kevin's staff was super helpful last year in helping us get some things set up and taken down. So hopefully having some from them if that's still okay. Last year, we were able to give the Booster Club $7,935 from that event. Most of that was from vendors. And we are increasing the vendor registration again. Last year, we went from $30 the previous year to $40, and this year we're going to $50. So hopefully we can get closer to that $10,000 mark. Sure. Should be great.
Well, thanks for all you guys do for this. Yeah, probably awesome. One of our signature events. And also, I mean, the fireworks on this one are up there. 1 and 1A for me. Favorite events that he's telling me. I wouldn't miss this in the world. And I like to win baskets.
We appreciate the baskets.
I don't actually make save money. I've spent a lot of my tickets, but I like winning those baskets.
Yeah,
I feel like a winner.
I like getting that phone call a lot. It feels so good, doesn't it?
Yeah, super fun.
Yeah. So any public comment on the request to use the city facilities and have the Christmas stroll on December 4th? Mr. Campbell.
You're good. So 26 years I've been on the fire department, two things I've never done in the fire department or since I've been on the department. One is to see the Christmas stroll, and two is to watch the rodeo parade. Last year, I had the opportunity to come up to the City Hall building. I had to get some stuff out of our office, and it was an absolute disastrous nightmare. And I cannot allow that again. There was so many, it took me 20 minutes to get from the east door to my office upstairs using the east stairwell. I know in years past, we had a fire alarm in the building, and the fire department came down here. Nobody was out of the building. It was all we could do to get people through the building to get to the fire panel to do the investigation for the fire. I think there definitely needs to be some kind of control or restriction on the number of people allowed in both City Hall and the fire hall. As they are city properties, the liability for us if an accident happened, if somebody was injured, I think it's incredibly high. We do have occupancy loads that we have established for the building and for fire hall. I know for the gymnasium, just the gymnasium portion, just as an example, in this building, as soon as you establish chairs and tables in there, your occupancy is 121 personnel. That would be probably half of that is going to be vendors. I don't know how many tables are in there. One of my big concerns from last year was there was a table at the top of the stairs that was right at the edge of the stairs, and people were standing at that table, literally standing on the top step. And one person bumps in the crowd and it causes a surge in the crowd, that person's on their way down the stairs. Granted, there were so many people on the stairs, they probably wouldn't have fallen very far anyway. But I still have a huge issue with over occupancy of this building. My job as the fire chief, I'm learning this all as I go. Please excuse me, I'm still learning. Is life safety for our facilities, as well as the personnel and those people who come to visit our city. And I think we need to come up with a better plan for the use of this building and the fire hall to meet those occupancy loads. I'm willing to give a little bit, some concessions. I do that for a lot of things. But I think after visiting the building last year, it was an absolute nightmare. It was wrong. And if, Lord forbid, something happened, it would be a mass casualty incident for the fire department. And I don't know that we would have enough resources to handle it. We would definitely be right off the page asking for mutual aid for medical or any kind of fire suppression in the facility itself. So I think we need to look at that pretty hard before we, I don't mind letting them do it. I just think we need to get a plan together for the occupancy of the building so that we don't have that kind of a problem that would lead to.
So I think what I've heard is that you're going to do an assessment of the occupancy loads for the building to help facilitate this request.
We already have occupancy loads.
And you're going to help enforce that and ensure that this event
complies with
that.
I'm happy to work with Valley Bank.
Perfect. So I think it's a clear direction, given you've raised the issue, that you do some homework and figure out what the occupancy loads are and work with the vendors to ensure that we're meeting that on that evening. That'd be great, because I think this is an important event. We don't want to kill it. But if you have concerns, help us enforce them and make sure that we're educated as to what those are.
Yes.
Perfect.
I love the event. I've been doing the popcorn thing at the fire station. I miss the event, but I'm all for the event. It's a great draw for our community. I just want the community and the visit to be safe.
Thank you for coming. So I think there's a method here to like where we prove this as that have been with a focus on, where we set things and means of egress and flow of traffic are considered in our placement of tables, and maybe at a level that hasn't been before. And I think that we can go through that. And, I think there's been trying to get as much as we could in there. And I think that we maybe neck that down a little bit to make, people, the flow of traffic and means of egress in this is a factor.
Yeah.
From my perspective, we're losing this event, or we're diminishing it in attendance is not really an option. This is something valuable to this community, and it is very important in our makeup.
Sure.
That would be my thoughts. So I think that there's ways that we can address, some of the flow. I think we have led tables up places that are definitely affecting flow. We need to address some of that. So I think there's ways there. You wouldn't got too damn popular.
No. Okay.
He'd have the same problem in high school. Happened to him. Not too popular.
Yeah.
And then
he was homeschooled.
I love that.
Yeah. So I think there's a methodology. I think we should just have my recommendation. We approve it, and let's have a working relationship regarding flow of traffic and means of egress. Any other public comment on this request? Seeing none, council.
I do think it provides a potential opportunity, because the only negative I have ever heard of the Christmas stroll is the clustering of people and the crowd.
Yep.
And I think if it was presented to the public as an opportunity to say that we now have a new flow to it, or we're going to have and I don't know what that looks like, but something that would maybe help move people along through the building. Sure. And that we, the other question I have is, the old Harella's, if there was a possibility with it vacant, if the owners of that building would allow anybody in there. I don't know if the owners of that building. The Beer Keys, own it. But
but you have to reach out to them. I don't know.
Yeah, but just another thought of getting people moving throughout more space, depending on weather, of course. But I think it provides a potential opportunity to say it'll be a more efficient process coming through, and maybe that'll be more popular.
Yeah.
And spread out vendors further, and less. Okay. Yeah. Anybody else got Kevin?
I'll move to approve pending, or not pending, but I'll move to approve with the coordination with the fire chief.
I have a motion to approve with coordination.
I'll second it.
And a second, all those in favor.
Aye.
All right, thanks, guys. Next up, we have the appointment of Jennifer Opie, greenhouse right here, to the East Salt Police Commission. We did reach out, and as you know, we're seeking members for that. Jennifer, Paul, Amy, and such is interesting. And so, yeah, we have that is, she's been a member of the community. She's submitted written comment on some things before, and we've seen her at a couple of meetings. I haven't seen her around. So, yeah, it'd be I think we're not in a mood to be. We're certainly welcome to have anybody that wants to do the job. So, any public comment on the request to appoint Jennifer Opie to the East Central Police Commission? Seeing none, council.
Motion to approve.
And a motion to approve.
I'll second it.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Next up is the City of East Helena Western Montana Hazard Mitigation Plan Adoption Resolution. This comes up on occasion. You have it in front of you. There's plans for big items, big disasters in place. Obviously, we have been a part of those in the past, and that plan has been, I guess, adjusted a little. But they just want to make sure that we're still on board and we're still East Helena to be collaborative for it. The only time I've ever seen this come into place in East Helena was floods. As far as us being used there, you deal with your neighbors, and floods has been when they've been used here. So we've been a part of this for a long time. I think they changed some verbiage in these things, but I think it's recommended we would probably still be a part of it. Any comment from the public?
Is there any questions? So my name is Kyle Sturgle Simon. I'm the emergency manager for the county and for East Helena and Helena. So the hazard mitigation plan, like the mayor mentioned, is a 5-year plan, and it actually expired back in, say, 2022. What's different a little bit about this process was that it was always a county-by-county process. Hired a contractor, had them come to the county, just do it for the county. The state decided to make it a little bit easier for everybody to do these regional plans, so counties could opt in. They hired a single contractor to do the western part of the state, the central part of the state, and the eastern part of the state. And then we all contributed what we would normally contribute, but we didn't have to manage the contract. We didn't have to manage the grant. So this, as Mayor mentioned, flooding is the most damaging natural hazard in the area. Fire is the most common. And then earthquake is kind of always spread over our shoulders as well. Not nearly as common, but definitely back here in the area. We have a lot of faults. Keep finding more. There's some mapping in this project.
Didn't look for faults. You'll find them.
Yeah, hazard analysis. You're just always finding your faults. But yes, so the plan itself is posted on the county website, on the emergency management tabs. There's a full regional plan that talks about everything that's kind of impacted Western Montana. And then we have an annex specifically for the county, which makes it a little bit more accessible. It's only 8 pages long, which usually a couple hundred pages. It's not necessarily the most riveting reading, but when I do get calls from people who are new to the area or moving in, and they call our office, hey, what do I need to know about fire? What do I need to know about flood? I send them to that. And it's a pretty easy, quick way for them to kind of get a feel for what's facing the area.
You're not trying to scare anybody off at all, do you? Here's a good 80-page read for you about how things can go wrong. Here you go. Welcome to the jungle. Listen to some Guns N' Roses.
But on the brighter note, a pretty significant part of that plan is dedicated to action items. That's something that we worked with East Helena years back. All of our response agencies, partners, so basically that identified, yes, we know that there's what can we do about them? There's 129 action items in there. A lot of them are things that we're currently working on, or there are programs in place to address them. Pretty proud of the fact that, like, number one is increasing fire resiliency for private property. People being aware of the fire hazard and then doing things on their own home can make them safer. And our partners, Tri-County Fire Safe Working Group,
do a really good job of providing free home risk assessments. People can get on their website, sign up. Somebody comes out, looks over the property, gives them an idea of, you know, things they might want to change. If it's too big of a job, they can get them in touch with a contractor that will come in and remove, you know, larger shrubberies. Juniper, they hate juniper. They'll always tell you to take out your juniper. I also support. And then we, the county, do our best to get grant funding to help try getting fire safe with the work that they do. And we're actually applying tomorrow for $500 million FEMA that will go towards private property fuels reduction and defensible space. I think a couple of properties in mind are either in East Helena or right on the border. It's not all doom and gloom. There is some stuff we can imagine.
Kyle, thank you for that. The gin distillers are the only people closing that's juniper.
Mine went.
They're like, yeah, they're really big fans of juniper, actually.
I'm a huge fan of the juniper bush or tree, depending. So I take offense. Yeah, however, it does have an awesome byproduct.
That yes, the gin company. Yes.
Well, berries. If you didn't know.
Yeah.
Harvest it all, turn it into gin, leave none. Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
They also just need the berries, and then you need a nectar. Appreciate that. Again, any other public comment on the adoption of the Western Montana Hazardous Mitigation Plan adoption resolution? That's a lot of words. Seeing none, council.
Make a motion to approve.
Motion to approve draft resolution 629. That was much easier.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, here's my favorite thing on the agenda tonight. Thanks. Resolution of respect, of esteem, and esteem for Isabel, or as I spelled her, Izzy, Pistolak. Isabel, that's, you know, this is one of those ones, if you know, you know. Izzy Pistolak was a force of nature in this town for a long, 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 long time. And a great family recently passed away. A couple interesting notes in this thing. You'll note she was the very first female to ever serve on the Eastville City Council. So, awesome trailblazer there.
What year was that, Kelly?
I bet you that was in the 40s, 50s,
11.
But first one, and you ever knocked on her door running for an office, you found out. if Joe was there, you got to deal with him, really. That's the whole time. But anyway, one of their great residents from a long time ago also was impactful in the Senior Citizens Program and the Daily Dinner Club, as well as the Son of Volunteer Ladies Fire Department, Ladies Auxiliary. So, again, sad to see her go. We don't do this for everybody, but this is absolutely somebody that deserves this. So this is a resolution of esteem and respect for Izzy Pistolak. I'm going to say the name I know. But it's in front of you, and I think that, you know, this is kind of a no-brainer. But any public comment on the resolution for Izzy? Seeing none, council.
I'll move to approve it.
I have motion to approve.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All righty. This is another easy one. We had a little confusion before, but this is for the general election. Although there is no contested seats up, democracy, I think, needs to happen. And so this is to hold the general election by mail-in ballot. There aren't going to be a lot of choices for everybody, but everybody had an opportunity to sign up, I guess. So, I think that still it's a good act in governance, and I think we should do it, and let's have everybody know that it was official. So, any public comment on this request to hold the election, the general election? Seeing no public comment, council.
I'm going to approve.
I have a motion to approve.
Okay.
And a second. All those in favor?
I did have a comment about it.
Oh.
I did mention this at Coffee with the Chamber this morning because they were talking about the Helena elections. So I did mention that this is happening in East Helena if we approve it tonight. So
yeah.
Just an FYI.
They're definitely having one. They have a primary. Next up is the Prickly Pear easement or Estates Regional Lift Station Grant of Easement. I'm going to turn this one over to Kevin. Kevin kind of got the ball on this one here.
Yeah, but this is actually a pretty easy one. So this is creating the easement and the agreement with MEDG for the South 518 parcel, the 800 acres. So pretty standard easement declaration. The only thing that's a little bit different on this There is some in Exhibit B, there is some guidelines, and if we ever do have to excavate the site, that is the original soil repository. So there is just some guidelines on how we're supposed to treat that soil and that. Really nothing new, but Brad reviewed it and has city staff support and some great spots for neutralization for that outside.
You referred to the environmental conditions from Bridget, right?
What's that?
You said the additional stuff. You're referring to the environmental conditions from Bridget? It's part of this? Okay, yeah. Any public comment on the regional lift station grant of easement?
This will be put over there in that 20 acres, right?
Yeah, it's on the 20 acres west of 580. Yes, soil service.
Seeing none.
So this is maybe not a question for us to answer, but on that lot 2A and part of the 1A, so there will be a building there.
Yeah, there'll be a
listing. So is it, it's being sold? I mean, that diminishes the...
Yeah, it certainly does, but it's a good
amount of property.
Yeah, it does nothing but help her sell that property though, because currently...
Having a lift station.
Yeah, and sure. The elevations don't work right, so if they put the lift station east of 518, you'd have to build another lift station on that parcel anyway to pump over to that other one. And as a city, we don't want to limit how many lift stations we have to maintain, so... That's where it falls.
So Cindy's seeing this as a benefit to sell the
property. She approached our developers in the past. Okay.
Good.
It works out way better for us, too.
Yeah. That's an interesting concept. I didn't think of it. So thanks. I'll move to approve.
I have a motion to approve.
I'll second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All righty. Now it's some boredom. I'll try to keep it fast. What did the mayor have to do? Well, the mayor did some fun stuff, like going to the last food truck event, and wow, what a turnout. I saw Wes walking across the park. But I was eating at the time, and I was going to go up and talk to him eating Wes.
One interruption.
No, I got dang near eating my finger off, and it was good. Yeah, again, what a great effort out of Joe Mitchell and his team, just putting on yet another community event outside so we don't got to worry about egress for anybody. You know, people can gather, and there's no worries about egress. Yeah.
We can egress as we
want. Egress for the crick if you want. Jump on that. Anyway, yeah, but it was just again, I didn't think it would be better, and the second year was better. Just amazing. Really cool. I appreciate it, and I hope they keep doing it. They did say they intend to do it next year, so. So successful. Helena's reached out to them, and they told them no. So
good.
Yeah. Had the meeting that has been referenced three times now with the DEQ regarding the groundwater permitting. There's some metals in our effluent sewer that we need to test for to make sure we meet the non-degradation limit in groundwater. Fun times. If you ever get bored, go to a DEQ meeting, you'll think he's got acronyms. I'm just like, I don't know what they're talking about. The big two, budget, we've been crunching our numbers, and I'm going to publicly express to all the people here just how much I appreciate him, even Kevin, who has to deal with me. And telling him, no, we got to get that done all the time. And he's like, sometimes there's only so much money. So Kevin pulls the reins. I'd like to do everything for the city and appreciate their efforts. It's a big pull, but we did receive it. And you should have they received it tonight or they tomorrow. You still got stuff you didn't get done, didn't you?
Right.
Well, the one thing, yeah, the art stuff. Okay. It's
me.
It's
me. Pick up.
And then I would like to discuss in as part of my report a time frame for a budget meeting that meets your guys' assuming we get it to you tomorrow the next day. Is Monday work for you guys?
Oh, I lost my calendar.
We're doing this again. You used to have to pull up and pull like 13 days in a row, but now it's just
Monday the
25th. Yeah. I'd like to get the big meeting in before the 27th. I have knee surgery on the 27th.
What time, Kelly?
I think 5-6, whenever works for you guys. Earlier, better. Get in here, knock it out.
Well, what works for you? School stuff is starting that day where we go meet their teachers. That is until...
Thanks, guys.
6.
Thank you.
It isn't until 6?
It is until 6.
So you want to go 6:30, like standard meeting time?
Well... I don't know if it'll take that long, but 6 is the earliest I could do it that day.
Everybody else have thoughts? Anybody else have thoughts?
Six works for me.
Turn on the date.
We're talking the 25th of August.
Great.
You got something else going on?
It's my anniversary, but I can tell my wife.
Would you?
You'll see her another day.
Yeah, next year.
Oh, yeah, see you next year. you might not.
But I'm not.
You're not required to be here. You could.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, Kevin doesn't even remember his, so it doesn't matter. Like,
you're still married?
We should all be like really pleased that Kevin's still alive, because it was touch and go last week.
We're doing 6:30.
Six. Time, right? Six works. Suzanne, do you have thoughts?
Yep, that works.
Works for you. 6 o'clock, 25th? Yeah. Leave rose on the table, Pete. All right, so I think that's a bit, get that knocked out and have that discussion that day. So that gives us time to notice it, and I think you'll get the budget here in a minute now. And then the last thing is, and I was intending to have the award here, but I was unable to acquire it. I'm going to bring it in here for you guys to see it. The attending Chicago, the Phoenix Awards, as well as the whole Brownsfield conference. Eye-opening is that how I describe that. It was, first of all, it's the largest conference center in the nation, so it's like a mile and a half just to walk across it. It's too much. Too big.
Was the egress okay?
There's a lot of means of egress, yes. But they also have these great big walkway tunnels over, you know, 5-lane highways, which don't make a lot of sense. Which, if you look at the picture, we're actually standing on those tunnels. In Chicago, their Soldier Field in the background and the London skyline. I don't leave anything in Chicago that I'm ever going to go back for. I'll be clear about that. Sticky and hot there, and I'm not a big city and expensive. Not interested.
Deep dish pizza did you get in Chicago style?
I did have a Chicago dog. I did go to Wrigley. Again, I'll take East Hill every day. But make no mistake, this is the first ever Montana and Brownsfield's project to receive this award. And Cindy is one of the nation's leading, she runs, I think, like 6 state trusts right now. These were one of the smaller ones, money wise. Brownsville could be anything from a remediation of a gas station to an area, a bleeding area. To meet these people that do these all around the nation and see it done, Wes, you dig on this, man. I'm telling you, it's great. There's so many cool stories. To get that award was really special and shows that what all of us and the people over the trust and all the parties that have what we've done to make this better for this community. And I think that's, we're going to get the award. We're going to build a case for it. It's going to be here at City Hall. It's a big deal. And I didn't know it was. And it was interesting when we did our little presentation. You know, we had about 50 to 60 people attend, which blew my mind. And people that came up later and just asked questions were pretty interesting. One lady I had probably an hour long conversation with was working on a project in Cal, Idaho. And she was like, wow, the community involvement is key piece we're looking for, and just talking about how we do it, and really interesting to see. So again, I'm not going back to Chicago. When I thought Kevin was like funny when he didn't even want to go, but I'm going back there 0 times, but it was really impactful and cool for the city to have that. So I intend to get that. Jen has it right now. Jen with the trust group has the award. It's glass. I don't know if they trust me to touch it. That's fair. So we'll bring it in here to you guys to see it when I can. It's neater in person. They spent some money on it. I'll put it that way.
Have you approved Cindy to stay on yet?
Oh, everything we could do. My understanding of what's going to happen is the EPA is moving towards that end to appoint.
Oh.
She'll be appointed from the EPA. Exactly. That seems to be where this is going to end. She does not expect an appointment from the state administration. An EPA appointment is, they've worked under that before, and they're comfortable with that. So we can move forward with one of them. I think that we will hear news about that. EPA is also a federal agency, so their speed of you moving isn't super fast. But man, being around all this, it's a big deal. It's mind blowing. I can't even describe it in the reports and this outside. But if you have questions, it's a fun conversation. I dive at it. So that's my report. Next up is Councilmember reports. Councilmember Dahl.
Report.
Councilmember Leland.
I did the food truck thing too. That was wonderful. And I think that's all I did this time.
I've been out of town every
good food.
Council Member Feist.
Food Truck Festival
Joe mentioned this morning that they, from what the food trucks had indicated and had sold, 3,000 people were there, which is pretty incredible for a city of maybe 2,500. So putting that into perspective, it just shows, and that was just this last one, not the two before that.
Right.
So the thousands of people that have visited, and yeah, the city of Helena has been trying, and Joe's, they're booked. So.
They want him to do one uptown?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And the food trucks have said that they sell more here than they do at Alive at Five. And so, anyway, it's awesome. And Joe and Whitney are terrific for our community and really walk the walk. Had coffee with the chamber this morning at Galaxy. And one of the things, too, and also at the last Hometown Helena, Mary Hollow presented about Prickly Pear Land Trust, but the amount of praise she has for the city, as well as for you, Kelly, and winning that Phoenix Award, she just can't speak highly enough. So just to know that you guys get a lot of kudos, you as well, Kevin, she mentioned you often, just all that you guys do and to make that happen. So had an MBAC board meeting tonight, some issues going on in Lincoln, good and bad, but with MBAC funds that have been loaned out. I've gotten three calls in the past 2 weeks about the mobile homes on East Main, and I have referred them to the county every time. Drenda was at coffee with the chamber this morning, and so I mentioned it to her as well. And they are going to be looking into the public nuisance of that derelict area. And I just expressed that I'm getting calls, and I just reiterate to folks that it's not the city limits and to call county. But there are some significant concerns now raised at the public health department I have with county commissioners, and I'm encouraging folks to do so. So that's what I got.
Kevin can attest to two things on your report there. One, the amount of garbage they produced. They came in like 9 o'clock at night out of their houses and emptied cans, right? And bought new cans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how awesome they went. That's how cool these guys are. They went out and tried that and made that work. And number two, you're not the only person that's called public health. Talk to we've received complaints internally, and we've passed those along. Yeah,
that's.
I can't. Where are we talking? Homeless people out, Jim.
I'm see,
they
don't
want to
live in those.
Yeah. No, but if you didn't have a roof.
Yeah, that's right. Next there to are not having a roof.
The alley cats are choosing to not live in them as well.
Yeah. You know, I was on the way to Denver. You go the side of buildings. You know, I saw there was a lot of trailers that you could have picked up. Oh, geez.
Don't give any ideas.
Councilmember Ferguson.
I was also out of town in truck again, so I don't have anything to report.
Thank you. Pete, you're up.
Speaking of the East Clark Sewer District, I did get a call from Bob Murdo the other day. Was that Wednesday or Thursday last week? I was out for National Guard training last week. I'll have another week in September. But I did talk, I called him back and chatted with him. Mr. Murdo doesn't represent the East Clark Street District, but worked with them through the process, was the bond counsel on the project. There was a point where the district had gone in and talked to a lawyer, but Silverman Law Office, who I spoke with on the phone, I don't believe that individual was ever retained, apparently, because they've not called back. They never called Mr. Murdo. Mr. Murdo is now being contacted by the district again. The offer has been on the table. The issue is that the gallonage that we've allotted them through that agreement is enough for the number of connections that are in the ground for the EDU calculations that you hear of from our engineers. So it's not, the contention is, well, the offer we've put on the table is you get to keep your gallonage. We've made that commitment, but it's for those connections that are currently in the ground, stubbed out underneath and to a lot of those parcels. But you can't move them. If you want to move the allocations, you need to come back to the city council and ask. And we have a map proposed that was from their initial engineering drawings that shows exactly where the stuff is in the ground, the service areas we committed to. The issue is the new additions to that part of town is in a parcel that there is not facilities in the ground to service those, and they'd like to move some of their capacity over to that new area to then hook those things up,
certain
which
costs.
I said the city would consider. Once you get in good and standing, you can come back and talk to the city and ask for additional capacity. The capacity you have now is for the connections you have in the ground. The intent is to get you back in good standing before we continue any discussions as to expanded use in that part of the area abutting the city. So thank you for bringing that up. I did talk to them last week. I reiterated the city's position. I think it's more than fair.
Basically, it's incentive.
They are paying under city rate right now. So I think what we're going to do is end up issuing them a rate adjustment letter and just upping their rates. Because are they still coming in and paying their bills? They have been. They're just paying because we didn't up initially because we thought we were in a dead period when they were not with that agreement. We're not just going to let you sit there year after year and not pay what the rest of every resident is paying per ADU. So we're going to up their rates to where everyone else in the city is paying, give them proper notice, do the public hearing. Even though they don't have an agreement in place, their bills are going to go up.
When is their 2 years left? When does that lapse?
It's coming.
Yeah.
Whether we're at it right now. I was just thinking that Bob called last week. And I didn't
have that. Can the rate increase letter indicate that?
Yeah, potentially. The only issue is actual recourse. Like,
is what?
Recourse.
No, DQ I know. Is not going to let us turn the pipe.
There are some options there. And I mentioned this to the mayor on Monday, yesterday. Annexation is an option. They waived the annexation process, the annexation. We annex that whole thing. They all start paying city rates. There are street issues. There's brand new sewer facilities, which is nice. There's cop issues. There's water transmission lane main issues. But I will say, as I warned the council then and the mayor then, extending services outside of municipal boundaries is risky business. And we have found ourselves in a position we are literally tethered to some folks who are not being good partners. I'll work that over tomorrow and kind of see where we're at. I think that the best option is just to up their rates, hope they keep paying, and reiterate our position that we are making you whole. We are standing by the commitment we made to you initially. You pay your bills. You can connect everyone you need to in that capacity, as was drawn up, but you may not extend anywhere beyond that until it's approved by the city. I think that's a fair option. Not even an offer. It's literally meeting of the minds is what we all agreed to. But you brought it up. So my kids finished swimming lessons. It was awesome. They swam out here at East Elinus here. It was great. One night they were the only kids there because it was raining. Apparently no other parents showed up. So my kids swam with one-on-one coaches, which was cool. National Guard training. Oh, I did receive a phone call today from an attorney. Another attorney on another matter. And this goes to the discussion we had tonight. I don't want to, it's not on the agenda. I just want to give you a heads up that there are competing developers, people looking to connect to our sewer plant, which is now down to 88, 89 EDUs left of capacity. We are not able to give them Will Sir letters because we don't have capacity. And that's been kinked. That number, which you can remember had been in around the 300s, has continued to dwindle as the plant has, one, seen its actual flows, two, additional capacity has been eaten up by in-building or additional phases of things. So we're at 88. So I did get an attorney. Essentially, the claim is that they think we made some commitment to capacity. I'm fairly certain we have not. But I'm going to pull the minutes from a meeting we had back, two meetings, maybe back in 2023. Talk to the engineers, talk to Kevin. I think we're in a solid place. I think we're doing the best we can. I think that tonight was an indication of that, an hour and a half, looking at the feasibility of how quickly we can actually get something online while not putting us in a position where, if the market turns, we're sitting there holding a multi-million dollar facility that we don't have anyone actually subdividing, connecting into, but still being faith developing so that they can develop stuff. So if we have a more firm conversation later about that, I just want you to be aware that people are coming increasingly competitive for our limited capacity. And there's a couple steps we're doing. We are taking a look at working through a formalized EQ process to reevaluate our flows to see if there's more actual EDUs in the facility than we're currently rated for, which would be essentially we have new sewer lines from these two new subdivisions. So those EDUs, old math of what old East Helena flows does not equate to what the new, so there's less flow going. Again, that's a DEQ process. We can't back the napkin, figure that out, and just ham jam it. It needs to be approved by DEQ. But we're doing that to see if we can get above that 88 without doing anything else. Additionally, we're finishing the project you talked about. Like, we are being proactive. So I'm honestly insulted and annoyed that they would, one, threaten us repeatedly to retain counsel and then do it. We will respond honestly, accurately, and firmly. We are doing everything diligent that we can to allow for growth. But again, these are just facts and the truth. And I think our engineers and Kevin, Mayor, and I, and Amy, and anyone else who's met with these folks has been honest with that throughout. So, and then also there's a stormwater DEQ meeting coming on Monday. Did we mention that one?
You didn't mention that one.
Yeah, so we have an additional meeting. There's a DEQ stormwater thing that they want to wrap us into the city of Helena. It seems fairly arbitrary. We're going to have an initial meeting. They wanted to have it at DEQ. I think Kevin asked about it. Do you guys come out here? I have court that morning. So
wrap us into Helena's presentation, like to their city commission?
No, no, no.
DEQ
in, at the state office. So this is the Montana Department of Environmental Quality on stormwater.
Wrap us into Helena's what? You said
wrap us into their urban area of stormwater, like we're all in one basin. I don't know, Wes, to be frank, what their authority is.
Greater regulation of stormwater they'd like to create based on us being adjacent to Helena. But they have current procedures in place to say no municipality over 10,000, but yet they think that they're of the mind that we should be included.
I think of every major city around the state, so Great Falls, Billings, actually they can go by county. So if not, that's an EPA thing, but they said over the phone, this is the best I've got, them saying that they have the authority and EPA to wrap us in. So there's three additional ones that they're bringing in, Belgrade, Butte, and then little old East Helena is their third target. So we'll have that meeting on Monday. And that is 2 weeks worth of phone. Any other questions?
The Grim Reaper spoke. Bad news. Thanks, Pete. We'll be fine on both those things. Understand our stormwater is so simple. Even if we have to, it's not going to be a big deal. Just another level of reporting that I think is completely unnecessary on regard to this town. But we'll have that meeting on Monday and see what they got to say. Other than that, we should pay the bills, huh?
Seems a lot.
Is there any way we go about that? Like,
I forget who does that.
I'll move we pay the bills.
We have a motion to pay the bills.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. All right, guys. That being said, I will adjourn this meeting slightly under 2 hours at 8:22. Sorry, this is a little long, guys. We might have a couple of those. We got stubs.
Your name was Jamie, right?
Remember when
that off?
We were here at Cannon Stills?
What?
Remember when we were here at